from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with the launch of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative in early 2015. The goal was to reduce the percentage of people in poverty by 50% over 15 years by the year 2030. So we have a long way to go and a lot of time to get there, but 2.5 years in, some critics of the Anti-Poverty Initiative have called for faster results or more transparency. Is that fair? In a piece for the Democrat and Chronicle earlier this month, journalist Patty Singer wrote that it wasn't possible to determine how anti-poverty money is being used specifically line by line. Rather, she was only given broad brush explanations for how millions of dollars have been allocated. So this hour, we have the chance to discuss the Anti-Poverty Initiative in detail. What does the public misunderstand? This is sort of a good reset moment to define what is it not, who controls it, how is the money being used. New York State recently announced that $4.75 million will be directed toward early childhood efforts, a significant prong in the anti-poverty fight. We know that is critical. We're going to discuss that effort as well. Let me go ahead and welcome our guest for the hour, the executive director of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, and you might hear RMAPI, that's the shorthand for it, is Leonard Brock. Leonard, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also here is Dr. Marvin McMickle. You know him as president of the Colgate Rochester Crozer Divinity School, and he is one of the co-chairs of the steering committee. Marvin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Don Braveman, president of Nazareth College, also a co-chair of RMAPI's steering committee. Don, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
You know, Leonard, I think this is a good time to reset a lot because, you know, the public has a lot of interest in this and certainly wants to try to measure as we go how it's going. While I think allocating patience, but also wanting results, I know that's a balance to strike here. But, right. You know, you've been hearing, we're going to kind of work through some of what we've heard from some of the critics recently. But why don't we just kind of back it up and say, what do you think the public most often misunderstands about this initiative?
Yeah, I think the public most often misunderstand the funding. And I think there's this perception that we are responsible for managing hundreds of millions of dollars and that much of the expectations that we're trying to manage is a result of that misperception. Now, RMAPI is able to help influence how dollars are being spent, and you made reference in your opening remarks to 4.75 for early childhood supports. One of the things that we've been really thankful and proud to be a part of is the actual work that is taking place and what those funding dollars are being used for. So there are young people being served right now in programs that are sponsored or endorsed by RMAPI, and there are 300 young people engaged in summer programs that wouldn't otherwise be served as a result of the investment from the state to lift one of the early recommendations of RMAPI, because we initially had three recommendations of the 33 that we were rolling out, which was the adult mentoring, which is in the process now serving scores of families that are receiving resources they need to be self-sufficient. There was the system of social supports that we're in the process of establishing with our partners. And then there's the early childhood piece, and it was the dual generational approach that we were taking. And as you know, 75 to 85% of a young person's brain development are within the first few years of life. So this is an investment not only in young people and what we're doing to support families, and that is a child care provision too, you know, what young people are doing during the summer months, and these are kindergartens or 4 and 5 year olds, but it also is a preventive strategy and a competency building strategy that will help these same families or these same young people be successful in later life. So I think the misperception is there's not much happening, when in reality there's a significant amount of work that's happening. There are jobs that we've been able to help endorse and get off the ground. When you think about Clearwater and the Genesee Brewery and how they've been incentivized to hire people impacted by poverty, those were a direct result from the container or the work that we've done as it relates to RMAPI. When you look at the number of families being served within the adult mentoring and early childhood, these are actual families being served today. So people may perceive that there's not much happening, when in reality there are jobs that we're creating, there are training programs that we're establishing, there are people that we're trying to transition into employment, there's young people being served. And then when you look at some of the earlier recommendations relating to community building and even those guiding principles, you have the city of Rochester that's doing a significant amount of work to help implement some of those recommendations, from the Kiva, which is the micro lending for community persons, from the Vanguard demand pooling to the market-driven community co-ops. These are all activities and specific projects that relate directly to the work that we're doing within the RMAPI space. And then the other misperception is that RMAPI is an independent separate entity that's responsible for doing everything in and of itself, or as if it's an organization. RMAPI, more so than being an organization, is an operating philosophy. So it's made up of several organizations and institutions. And I just talked about City of Rochester, how they're a partner that's rolling out some of the recommendations, but Nazareth College, Colgate-Rochester Divinity School, the United Way, it's over 46 more. There's hundreds of organizations that make up this particular space. But when you look at the steering committee, you have like 40 institutions represented.
Okay. So tell me if people bump into me and they say, hey, you know, you talked about poverty on the program. Tell me what RMAPI does. Tell me if this is a good way to describe it. Mm-hmm. That prior to 2015, there had been a lot of anti-poverty efforts over the years. But the concern at that point, once we got to 2015, was they were often so sort of siloed or so individualized that they didn't really reach across. In other words, there were people who understood transportation's a problem. There's people who understood jobs and opportunity, structural racism, all of these things are a problem, but there was never an effort that tried to tie it all together. So RMAPI was created to say, hey, you have to work with these guys or we will help kind of adjudicate the best way to bring this together, and we don't care if we rub some people the wrong way, we're going to bring this together as opposed to everyone working independently and not getting results. That was sort of the yes. broad outline, yes?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, yep. But does that mean that you are in charge of the money that comes in, or that is not the case?
There are dollars that come into the Rochester community by which I'm not responsible for controlling. These are dollars in which we would influence as it relates to the priorities and guiding principles or some of the strategies relating to RMAPI, but we do not administer those state dollars. Now, RMAPI did receive $2.75 million for 3 years as part of the Empire State Poverty Reduction Initiative, and those dollars were for operating expenses, planning, and one-time transformational expenses. But as it relates to the dollars that come to the area, specifically for either the URI or for other projects, those are not dollars in which we administer.
All right. So I know we have some listener questions, and I want to hear from the co-chairs of the steering committee on a number of things, not the least of which are some of the comments that I flagged and that Marvin McNichol made of the Democrat and Chronicle as well earlier this month. Before we do that, let's listen to some of the comments you might have heard on this broadcast from people who have been critical, and I think it's only fair to let Leonard and the group respond to them. The first we'll listen to is from Tony Michiquet, who's a Republican county legislator. He made a comment that I thought was sort of bizarre. I admit, but let's just, you know, let's see if there's any validity to it. This is what he's running for mayor. He's a county legislator. He's a Republican. And here's what he had to say about the anti-poverty initiative.
They create a poverty initiative, $6 million plus, and a poverty goes up. I tried to join that poverty initiative, and I was told, no, we don't need any Republicans on it.
They told you we don't need Republicans.
I did. That's exactly what I heard.
Who told you that?
One of the ladies that was running it, I can't say, but I will tell you, there's a business owner who owns three McDonald's, and he's a Republican, and he was told the same thing. So, I mean, when you exclude people because of their party or for any reason, that's wrong.
Leonard, have you ever told a Republican they can't be part because they're Republican?
That's absolutely not true.
I might mention the county executive for a while was co-chairing the committee, so... I don't know what this guy's talking. I don't know who the guy is. I don't know what he's talking about.
He's a county legislator. He's a Republican candidate.
With all due respect, then.
He should have known that Cheryl DeNolfo was a central part of the operation.
and she's, I'm sure she's not the only Republican. Yeah, no. I found that bizarre, but I thought at least he's the, you know, the Republican Party's candidate for mayor. So Leonard, no validity there.
No validity whatsoever.
Okay. Sorry, Tony. But let's listen to some other comments made on a different day. This comes from Roland Williams from Champion Academy. His concern was that it hasn't been inclusive enough. And before we hear that, I will also point out that Bob Duffy to the Democrat and Chronicle did say that right now this community needs less competition, more collaboration. He told the Democrat and Chronicle that it should be a, quote, time to collaborate among agencies. And while he didn't name names, he said that our community, in relation to poverty, right now, quote, could do a far better job than is being done right now. So that's what Bob Duffy said. We'll let Leonard respond to that in a second, but let's listen to what Roland Williams from Champion Academy said, sort of on the similar theme.
I think it's important that when you say you want to collaborate, that you have to put the, your money where your mouth is. That's a simple term, but it's what we use in football, right? And so, for example, one of the tenets of the Anti-Poverty Initiative is trauma-responsive support. That's one of the tenets of the Champion Academy. I agree that trauma and vicarious trauma are humongous reasons that lead to bad decisions, right? So I subscribe to the Anti-Poverty Initiative tenet in action. However, you know, I heard about, you know, read something, is like $30-40 million came in from the Anti-Poverty Initiative and was distributed to organizations looking to help make a difference. And it was like 30 million or something went to Hillside, and then a million went to MCC, and then some more went to Catholic Family Charities. And so for a lot of people, they feel like that's not the collaboration or the team. You know, it's only a few people that get the resources. And I think that has, you know, hurt a lot of people's feelings, honestly. And I just believe that at the end of the night, it's going to just require us to keep on pushing, keep trying, and keep being a team.
I don't know offhand if Roland's numbers were correct. I think they might have been inflated. You're shaking your head, Leonard.
Yeah, we haven't administered any dollars to organizations. Our MAPI is not a program provider, and we definitely operate in the space of public-private partnerships and broad collaboration, and we're going to talk about collective impact. But as it relates to us administering funds, again, we do not administer funds.
But you recommend it. You said you can influence it.
We work to influence, but we do not administer the funds. We don't have the final say as it pertains to how dollars are directed either from the state or even as we work with our private partners, some of the funders within the local community. We do work to influence. We do influence dollars, but the $30 million, I don't know. I can't speak.
I don't know
to
where he's getting these numbers.
Okay, so let's just say Roland's numbers.
Can I give an example?
But yes,
I think it's very important for the community to really understand that point. Our MAPI is not an organization that gives out money, and it's not an organization that has programs. We don't provide daycare.
But you influence,
I'll give you an example of how we've influenced the distribution of money, not directly, but in an important way. So you have the Economic Council, the Regional Economic Council, that distributes a lot of money in all areas, not just for poverty purposes, but for a lot of different purposes. What we were able to do is to convince the council that as part of their process, they should require anyone applying for funds to file an anti-poverty statement. So how will the receipt of these funds help in the anti-poverty initiative? There's an example where our MAPI is influencing how funds are being distributed. I don't know where Roland got this notion of 30 million and—
But forget the number. And, he's feeling left out, and he's saying that a lot of it ends up going to big organizations like Hillside, and a lot of the other more granular organizations get left out.
So let me come behind Don, because another hat that I wear is the chair of the Program Distribution Committee for the Rochester Area Community Foundation. And one of the things that we require of anyone who seeks a grant from the foundation is conformity to the three guiding principles of our MAPI. If you don't want to talk about trauma, if you don't want to talk about structural racism, if you don't want to talk about community building, then don't talk to us. That's a direct result of a collective impact. Let's just shift to that. Mm-hmm. Because part of what Bob Duffy's comment causes me to sort of feel troubled by is that it sounds like he's on the outside reflecting on something when in point of fact, he's a part of the organization. So if you've got a concern, if you've got some reluctance, you know, don't fix your pronouns so that it's not them and they, it's we and us. And, you know, bring that concern to the table so that all of us can reinforce what one another is doing.
Do you think he's wrong, though, when he says—
Actually, I have a different view of what Bob was talking about. And I know Bob well. I'm on the executive committee of the chamber. Bob wasn't being critical of our MAPI. Bob's statement was in support of our MAPI.
Well, I agree with that, yeah.
Bob's point is that we have, and for decades, we've had many organizations doing very good work trying to address pieces of the poverty that exists in this city. What our MAPI is doing and what Bob supports and is part of is this collective impact approach, where our MAPI plays the role of trying to get all of these agencies that we don't control, our MAPI doesn't control, we don't fund, we don't tell them what to do, but try to get them working together towards common goals. And what are the common goals? Let's get people jobs. Mm-hmm. Let's get people in a position where they can deal with all of the support systems that are supposed to be available to them. Let's get people working towards making sure that kids get daycare so that not only they get better prepared for school, but parents can find jobs so that when their kids have daycare. So there are certain specific targets, goals that we're trying to get all the agencies to work on. I think Bob's comment is actually an endorsement of what our MAPI is doing. I'm surprised that it's being viewed as a criticism.
No, I don't think it's a criticism. I just hope that everybody who is on the steering committee or involved will actually name the name of our MAPI and, you know, sort of, I think he is pushing toward collective impact as a goal. Right. I just hope that, you know, all of us take our MAPI with us everywhere we go and use our positions and our influence not just to talk about the principles, but to celebrate the good work that is already going on.
Okay. And can I just, I just want to underscore one other thing, because this money thing baffles me. Our MAPI as an entity received a few million dollars for a three-year period.
2.75 for $3 million. And then we look
for 3 years. For 3 years, yeah.
That's it. We didn't get $30 million.
But that's not nothing.
No, but it's, yeah, exactly. It's what's needed to run an organization that's bringing together all the agencies in town that are trying to work towards the poverty thing. But I just want this, if nothing else, if the listeners understand, we don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to give out.
Okay, fair enough with that. So, you know, but we have heard from people who run local organizations, sort of large and small, and again, maybe this is wrong, maybe dispelling some of these misconceptions will be helpful here, that in order to fill out an application to even be considered for funding, you have to meet certain benchmarks. And the application, according to some that we've talked to, seems to favor organizations with more resources. So it's hard to even get in the door to be considered for funding. I don't know if that's true or not.
Application for what exactly?
I guess for funding that comes through, again, not directly from our MAPI, but from different programs that our MAPI might help, you know, influence where money goes to. I'm going back to what Roland told us. He feels like Hillside gets a big bulk of it, and there's not a lot left over for others. No?
I'm not certain exactly of the funding source or the funding stream that, you know, he's referring to.
Because, again, there is no RMAPI funding stream.
No.
That's one of the misconceptions.
We don't receive or act on proposals.
Okay. Right. So one more comment that we'll work through because it's been in the public eye a lot. Then we'll take some of your phone calls here. You've heard a lot from some of the mayoral candidates. Rachel Barnhart is a Democrat, and she wrote on her website, quote, "I'm concerned our MAPI is under the auspices of the United Way without any transparency or scrutiny by local governments. The United Way is a wonderful organization, but it is not subject to open records requests or accountable to taxpayers. It's been impossible to obtain annual line item budgets. It's my hope that our MAPI tackles big picture policy solutions surrounding the benefits cliff, transit, housing, and child care." She's saying when it's under the auspices of the United Way, Leonard, that's a way to say, well, we don't have to release line by line.
That's not the reason. That's not the rationale. But to speak to the big scale system, it sounds like that was a page out of our MAPI's book. That's exactly where we focused on the systems design, policies. We're not looking at programming our way out of poverty. We're looking at the benefits cliff. That's the work of the policy team. So the very things that we're being criticized for are the very things that we're working on and been working on. It almost appears that that was something that came from our MAPI documents to some degree.
Okay, but she may say, that's great to hear that, but when she asked for the line by line on how many, whether it's the $2.75 million that you're talking about, or other money that seems to at least be influenced by our MAPI, where that money it goes line by line, she can't get it because it's under the auspices of the United Way.
No, that's not the reason why. The 2.75, we just actually signed the contract with the state, and that's something that the steering committee will be approving, and that's something that we didn't have a budget prior, to be quite frank with you. So there wasn't.
But you got paid by somebody starting in 2015.
It was United Way that was putting up the resource to support our MAPI. So had it not been for the United Way, it would be very difficult for our MAPI to exist as an organization or as a body of work that is taking taking place. And that's the one thing. United Way was responsible for supplementing and also supplanting the cost for operations. So, you know, the state resources were great. We are very thankful. We're very, very thankful as it relates to the state's commitment to support anti-poverty in Rochester. But the United Way made it possible for us to coordinate these many moving parts. And United Way was the organization that supported the infrastructure that supported us. And much of what they contributed wasn't dollars that were received. Much of what United Way contributed were dollars that they provided in kind and support they provided in kind for the most part.
That 2.75 going forward, will we be able to see line by line how it's spent?
Yes, there would be public accountability 100%. And we've always been transparent about that. There's nothing to hide about public dollars or even any dollar that we receive.
You're just saying that 2.75, we don't have a line by line yet. That's why
not
it's
yet.
Not out there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's something that we're working
on. So just to put this again in context.
Yeah.
We, in the last year, we've been looking at providing a better structure for our MAPI. We hired an outside consultant, FSG, to come in. This is a company that's done collective impact work around the country. And I think it's important. I think it's confusing when you talk about collective impact. Our MAPI isn't a standalone organization. We're not a 501c3 organization. We are a collection of agencies in this community and individuals from those agencies who are trying to get everyone focused in the same direction on how do we tackle this the most serious problem for me, as far as I can tell, in this community, and that's the level of poverty and the concentration of poverty. So what we've done now is we've actually put an organizational structure in place. We have a steering committee. We have an executive committee. We have rules we don't call them bylaws, but basically bylaws for how we are going to operate. And now we have an organization that's still not an independent 501c3 charitable contribution organization. We're still a collection of agencies. The role United Way plays is basically to provide backbone. So they give us space. They give us, an ability to pay. We don't have the ability to actually write a check because we're not a separate entity. So they're the backbone organization. We are not an entity of the United Way.
Right.
I think that's important. United Way is supporting us as part of this collective impact program. That's their role. But we're not an entity of them. And now, I think that's important.
And I think, because I want to move past this in a moment, because there's a lot more to talk about. I want to get into what Dr. McMichael said to the Democrat and Chronicle about the role that everyone in the community, whether you are in poverty or not, has in owning this. And if we don't, what that means. I thought there were some striking comments there about as it relates to structural racism, what poverty means. I want to get into that. I want to get back to the money aimed at early childhood. That's significant here. And in a moment, Ellen and Menden, please hang there for 1 second on the phone. She wants to talk about transportation. I think that's important. Important as well. Don, I think some of the criticism about transparency comes down to this. And fairly or unfairly, probably a little unfairly, but I understand the root of this, which is this. Over the years, we really haven't seen poverty, quote unquote, fixed, right? I mean, it's gotten worse. But we sure have seen over the years individual efforts that spend taxpayer money from some source or another, often the state, sometimes federally, sometimes locally, on these efforts. Now, what that means is jobs are sustained, agencies, people go to work, they get paychecks, but people don't really emerge out of poverty. And the question is, if we're going to spend a lot more money, or if our MAPI is at least going to help influence a lot more public money, are we going to be able to follow that? Because we want to be really scrutinizing of this, not because we don't think that you guys are doing all the work that you think you can do, but because it really hasn't worked in the past, and yet people still punch their checks, but people in poverty don't get out of poverty. So we have to analyze this. And the concern is if it's under the United Way, we can't. No?
I don't follow the last point, but I agree with all the prior statement. I think, and our MAPI believes, that we have to be accountable. And we have working groups now that are working on various issues. So we have an employment working group. They're going to come up with suggestions for how the community might work better in producing more jobs and getting people trained for jobs. We are expecting that working group, when it designs this, to have assessment measures.
Right.
How many jobs are we talking about? in what period of time. That, I think, should be and will be public.
Right.
The fact that United Way is letting us use office space there doesn't prevent that. And I think that's an essential part. You know, I lived here back in the 70s. I was a lawyer then. I was working on all these issues revolving around poverty. I left. I've been back here 12 years. What I believe, and this is not because I'm part of it, believe me, I think this is the most focused effort this community has had on trying to collectively address this problem. There have been a lot of efforts, and a lot of good efforts. There have been people producing some change, but it's been, you know, here and there, and a lot of independent entities working on these things. This is the first time that I know of since I've been here where there's really a focus on a collective effort. And if we are going to tackle this issue, we have to do this collectively. Yes. We can't do it through every single good agency, well-meaning, and actually every agency doing good work, doing it independently. That's our MAPI role. If our MAPI succeeds, it's because for the first time, we're bringing together this community, and to Marvin's point, not just poor people, not just agencies that work with poor people, but bringing together this community in a focused effort to say, we can't tolerate this level of poverty any longer, and it's everybody's issue. It's not.
When we come back from our only break, we're going to get Ellen's phone call as it relates to transportation. I know our guests think transportation. We know that's a big issue. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about what's being done in that regard. I recall what Ed Doherty, who wrote the poverty reports in this community, said back in 2015. He said one of the most common questions he gets is people say, what can I do that will help solve things in a year? And he says, stop asking how you can solve this in a year. This is a long-term problem. But 2.5 years in, I think our guests understand scrutiny is a good thing, but we are trying to make sure we understand how this is working. And so, Ellen, we'll get your call. If you want to call the program with comments or questions, we'll take more calls as we go throughout the hour. We've got some comments on Twitter and email as well. Our guests from the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, Don Braveman and Marvin McMichael, are co-chairs of the steering committee, and of course, heads of local higher education institutions, and Leonard Brock is the executive director of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. Hope you're getting a better sense for what it is and is not, and we'll take that first phone call when we come back. Coming up in our second hour, youth sports seem out of control to a lot of families. A lot of pressure on kids to be not just on one team, but two teams or three teams. Maybe Saturday sports mean traveling all across the county, spending the entire day with three different games starting at 6 a.m. How do you get balance into youth sports to make better athletes and more well-rounded people? We'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me grab Ellen and Menden on the phone first. Go ahead, Ellen. Hi, Ellen. Are you there? John, do we have Ellen? Yeah, we do? We don't. Ellen, well, here's what I'm going to do. I know what Ellen wanted to talk about. She works with an organization called No One Left Behind. They help refugees. And what she wanted to talk about was the fact that refugees, they don't have cars, they come here, and they often find that as much as they're working to move forward in this community, that there's no way to get to work. And we know in the refugee community that's an issue, but we know in anyone who is living in poverty, that is almost always an issue, transportation. Leonard, we're 2.5 years in. I say 2.5 years in. Leonard was pointing out during the break as well, the launch in early 2015, it took months before we even really had priorities before the end of that year. So, I mean, we're essentially less than 2 years in. But we still have enough time to at least ask, have we made a dent in transportation, and is there a plan to do that?
Yeah, so we're partnering with RTS, and they're actually looking at transportation routes that would be able to transport individuals within the city to jobs that may be available within the outskirts, within the suburbs. So I know that's something that we're working on with the policy working group, and there's a transportation sub-team that's been focused on those efforts. We're also partnering in the city of Rochester is piloting a van pooling program where you have vehicles within a neighborhood that actually it's ride sharing that will provide transportation to individuals for a nominal fee to different jobs that exist throughout the community. But there's two parts to that question I wanted to actually make reference. The reason why transportation is a challenge, and we were trying to mitigate those resources and those mediums by which we could provide greater transportation, but it's the whole community building principle. The resources and the opportunities are not within the actual neighborhoods. So one of the things that we're working on is how to bring the resources, the jobs into the neighborhood so it is less of a challenge of transportation, but what are the supports within walking distance? So if an individual is looking for employment, how could we incentivize employment within neighborhoods? So when you look at the Genesee Brewery, the 64 individuals that they're looking to employ are individuals within that neighborhood. So individuals won't have an issue or a challenge with transportation. The same thing with the market-driven community co-op, which is one of the projects that the city of Rochester is launching, is to create neighborhood jobs and neighborhood resources and neighborhood supports. And that's with the adult mentoring. So everything is in accordance with those guiding principles. And if we were able to achieve what the guiding principle of community building suggests, transportation will be less of an issue. But being that it is an issue and that we're working towards having those jobs in neighborhoods, we're working on some interim strategies. And like I said, the ride sharing being one. The city of Rochester, I want to say they have a bike sharing program that they release, which is in alignment with some of the RMAP mapping principles. And then, like I said, we're working with RTS, Bill Carpenter and his team, and Maggie Brooks. She's actually a member of the RMAP policy working group. And actually, Dawn was the chair of the policy working group before being a chair of the steering committee. And that was always the area in which we highlighted and actually lifted those priorities.
I think it's really important that the public understands the role of transportation in this whole, because a lot of the jobs, as Leonard pointed out, are not being created in the community where people are residing. And one of the other projects is there's a Vanpool project where they're taking people to the new casino. They're taking people from the city to a company that's expanding in Canandaigua. And again, here's another perfect example of how collective impact works. So RMAPI has really highlighted the importance of transportation in the whole employment structure. The chamber, and again, I know this from talking to Bob Duffy. This is why I know he's part of this, not critical of it. The chamber does a lot of placement of temporary employees, and they're thinking of trying to figure out how they can address the transportation issue with those people that they're placing around the community. So the caller is right, or the comment is right. Transportation is a huge problem. It's something we are really focused on. And now what our MAPI does is try to get the various entities that could have an impact to start working towards resolving the challenge.
64 jobs through the brewing, is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
How many of those people came out of poverty?
All 64 jobs are designated for people in poverty. So the expansion, there was 100 in, my math is going to be 128 jobs that were available. That's the expansion. Half of those jobs are specifically designated for people in poverty.
Okay. And, I think over the years, we can look at probably one company at a time, but they want to know that there is an overarching strategy as well here. And
right.
So what we're hearing from Leonard and Don is two things. You have to create more transportation options for people to get to work because most of the jobs are not near where they live, and you have to bring more jobs to closer to where they live.
Right.
Exactly.
So that is, you mentioned van sharing or ride pooling, that kind mm-hmm. of a thing. But anything else when it comes to RTS? Are we thinking, can we broaden what RTS does? Is that feasible through them, Don?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking at. And Maggie Brooks, who's a part of this, as Leonard said, that's exactly what she's looking at. Is are there additional programs that RTS could provide that could get people to jobs?
Right.
And of course, the other issue we could start looking at now in this community is how do we better use ride sharing that's now available in this community to help people get to jobs outside of where they live. So that's an opportunity that just came up recently, as you know. And I think one of the things RMAPI should be looking at is how do we do that? There are some, there are policy implications. One of the discussions that we had about ride sharing is a lot of entities around this community have vans that transport, for example, we have vans that transport students. A lot of the colleges have vans that transport students. A lot of companies have vans. They're not used, 100% of the time. Is there a way to make use of these in the reduction of poverty effort? The challenge is there are insurance issues. You know, there are a lot of other issues that have to be dealt with, but those are obstacles that we're trying to look at.
Marvin McMichael told the Democrat and Chronicle the following about how to tackle poverty as a community. Quote, "We've got to get more people who are willing to take this with them to their job, to their country club, to their families, so that everywhere they go, and this takes a little risk, but they're willing to say something," end quote. For some reason, for me, the country club stood out the most to me, Marvin, because the country club world is so insular. In fact, The feature of joining a country club is that you're allowed to shut out the rest of the world if they don't have the resources. You're asking for a little bit of a cultural change here in how we look at poverty and all sort of own our role in it, yes?
Yeah, I think poverty has an impact on the entire community, and therefore it's going to take the entire community willing to at least hear about the realities that Don and Leonard have just spoken of. If you don't ride a bus, if you don't need ride sharing, if you don't have to worry about how to get to work, this whole conversation could be oblivious to you. So suppose we've got people on the steering committee or in the partnering organizations who simply make it their responsibility as a part of collective impact to say, everywhere I go, with whatever group I am a part of or in front of, I'm going to make it my personal responsibility to echo the concerns of our MAPI with respect to how to get 50% poverty reduction in 15 years in 3 targeted neighborhoods, working in partnership with lots of other agencies. We need, well, you know, I'm not going to use a particularly strong religious analogy, but we need some apostles and disciples who will go out with the message and not just come to a meeting, sit at a table, share their opinions, and then go out and act as if, you know, they're not taking this agenda with them. The country club, you know, it's just another place where if somebody doesn't take that message in, it might not ever come up.
You think they're talking about this at Oak Hill?
I don't belong to Oak Hill, so I don't know. But there's a chance that some of them are not. But if members of Oak Hill who have a heart for this issue are willing to raise it at Oak Hill, so much the better.
You want everyone to be willing to talk about this everywhere and to say, I don't care about my station in life enough to say that if I'm not in poverty, it's not my problem, because it's all of our problem.
Oh, my heavens. At the core of what it means to be in a democratic and free society is the notion that we are, in fact, in this together. And we cannot escape poverty or some of its consequences. So the sooner we can all address it, the sooner we can begin to resolve it, the better it's going to be for every single aspect of our life in Monroe County and beyond. To ignore poverty is to ignore a ticking time bomb.
All right, I want to grab another phone call. This is Robert in Fairport next on the phones. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Hey, I guess earlier in the conversation it was mentioned that there was an outside agency that was hired to do some consulting for this our MAPI organization or initiative or whatever. I was wondering what the name of the organization was, and I was also wondering how much they're being paid. Second question is, I don't recall earlier hearing about the involvement of Mr. McMichael and Braveman, and I'm kind of wondering, are they paid, volunteer? What's the deal with that?
Well, I'll answer the last question. I don't know about Marvin, but I'm not being paid.
No. Not a penny. This is a volunteerism at its best.
And collective impact is also about finding that shared work product and that shared work plan. It's an integrated collaborative effort where it's congruent with the mission of each of the organizations that are engaged and involved. So unlike many volunteer efforts or boards where it's something ancillary or tertiary, this becomes the core to some degree of the work or the institutions that we represent too. But to answer the question, the name of the group was FSG. FSG is the group that coined the term collective impact, looked at best practices as it relates to systems change efforts or efforts that were able to create population shifts. They were paid 100% from private resources, so ESL Charitable Foundation, and as well as the other Greater Rochester Health Foundation, Fairs Foundation, Rochester Area Community Foundation,
And I'm losing in several. The foundations actually paid for that consulting group, and $0 of that came from any resources from the state or anyone else, for that matter.
Okay, Robert, thank you. I hope that answers your question. Let me get Jane in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, so we have a continuing problem over here on Broad Street, and I'm just I've just given up on it. It's not rocket science, people. We used to have a bus stop right over here on at 475 Broad Street. It was abolished for whatever reason. I don't know. The buses still come down the street. They will not stop because there's no bus stop. And I've called and they've told me twice for two different reasons that it was just temporary. So, no, they're not going to stop here. We have 750 tenants sprinkled over three different apartments, Savannah, Manhattan, and Midtown here. They're elderly and disabled, 750 people. Why can't the buses, even if they're temporarily, like on Monroe, going to Monroe, stop here while they're coming down the street? There are 750 people who some of them would ride. I want to know why this is so complicated. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Thoughts here? Don?
It doesn't, I mean, I have no idea why the bus doesn't stop. It doesn't, you're right, it doesn't seem complicated to me either, but I mean, I think that.
Is that a question for RTS?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, I think that's a public transit routing issue.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly it's a question that we could probably
which
raise
we can take
at the
to
policy
them. Yeah, I mean,
committee.
Yeah, I think we could report. So I think one of the benefits of our mapping is also that there are so many opportunities for the community, the people who are actually struggling with poverty.
Yeah.
To report to us where their real challenges reside. And a call like this one is an important one because it tells us from people who are experiencing a real dilemma that this is where some help could really be useful.
Right.
So I'm very grateful for the call. Now, it's our responsibility to pass that along to the appropriate people to see what the problem is. I have no idea.
And let me broaden it because it highlights an important role for our MAPI, and that is one of the areas we're very concerned about is provision of services for people living in poverty. It's, you know, they're all over the place. You may have to go to four or five different places. You know, this woman would have to deal with RTS, but on something else she has to deal with another entity. What we're focused on in part of our effort is going to be to have the one door policy. Mm-hmm. So there is one door you walk through and you get your questions answered or someone will help you get those answers. And one of the ways we're doing this, for example, and this is, I love this example, is one of the foundations locally is focusing on what are called beacon schools or where you take a school in an area, and that becomes the area of focus. So you walk into that school. I mean, it's not just for the kids, but if you're a parent and you're having problems with Social Security or you're having problems with RTS, there's a one-stop shopping that can go on. And it would relieve so much of the trauma and burden on poor people if they didn't have to deal with all these different entities, and you talk about transportation, then you have to get to all these different entities.
Right.
You know, I'll give you a personal story. I had to sign up for Social Security. I guess that reveals how old I am. And I went downtown to the Social Security office, and I was told there's a 3.5-hour wait. And there are people sitting there who have jobs. There are people sitting there with kids. Because they don't have daycare. I had the luxury of being able to leave and saying, you know what, I'm going to an office out in Greece and I'm going to do this in 15 minutes. But a lot of people don't have that option. Those are the kinds of things that create burdens on poor people that I don't deal with and you don't deal with and we don't even think about. And this gets to Marvin's point. Right. Other people need to start thinking about this. Why is it that I can drive out to Greece and get dealt with in 15 minutes and someone's got to sit 3.5 hours downtown?
I want to squeeze in two more listener questions, and then I want to make sure we talk a little bit more about the 4.75 that's going to early childhood efforts. Patricia on Twitter, why isn't anything being done to help those who are poor in the suburbs? There's high concentrations in East Rochester, for example, I believe. Thoughts on that, Leonard?
Yes, it's a countywide effort.
Not
just the city of Rochester. We have some pilot programs within pilot neighborhoods, but that's to determine what works best and how to bring those things that work best to scale. But as it relates to policies and the systems change efforts that we're working to accomplish, that's across the county. That's not specific to the city.
All right, and let me. We got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Keith, next on the phone. Go ahead, Keith.
Real quick. Interesting show, Evan. Real quick question to your group. Is your organization a 503c?
No.
Ooh. So any money given? Oh, all right. The reason that my next follow-up question was maybe you are you willing to say what percent of your gross money goes to administrative office expenses, including payroll?
Leonard?
Administrative. I know there's a 5% administrative. Operating expenses is different than administrative. Administrative, we always try to stay within a 5% cap. But, like, again, we're working on that budget.
The budget he's talking about is $2.75 million over 3 years. That money came from New York State. Is that correct?
Right.
Came from New York State. And that's going to flow through the United Way. How people working like Leonard will be paid.
Right.
So Keith, go ahead.
Well, if it's a 503C, all that information is online. People who wonder where everything is going can actually look to see how much the administrators, how much the executives get paid. And there's transparency, and nobody can ever doubt what you're doing. If it's not, well, you know, is your office administrator your sister? Are you getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, et cetera, et cetera?
So Keith,
that brings up the question.
Yeah, let me just jump in. Thank you, Keith. We kind of brought this up earlier, so let me make sure I'm describing it correctly. The $2.75 million over 3 years hasn't been fully sort of fleshed out how it's going to be spent line by line. Leonard says even though it's going to flow through the United Way, which is not subject to open records requests in a way that a 501c3 would be, that you're going to make sure that this is available for public access.
Yes.
There will be sunlight, yes?
Yeah.
As soon as when?
It goes through steering committee approval, goes through state approval, and once that is approved, I would say, just to be safe, fourth quarter, third quarter.
Okay. So later this year, you'll get a better sense for that in a line-by-line fashion. That's the commitment they've made.
Another point just to make, too, the dollars are for back room, back door operations, so the working groups, the facilitation, coordination, the data and evaluation. It's not for programs. We're not a program provider. So just know that it's for the structural systemic things that we're working towards, unlike a 501c3 that administers or that is responsible for programs where you have admin and you have programs.
Yep.
This is for the operations.
So, for example, the $4.75 million for early childhood, which comes from New York State, is not going to, quote, our MAPI. It's going to whom?
Specifically to the programs. So United Way will be the fiscal agent or the fiscal sponsor, but the money goes directly to the providers. 100% of the money goes to the providers. So you have the Greater Rochester Summer Learning Association. You have the partners within the space of home visitation. And the $3 million will be administered to the county for child care subsidies.
Children's Agenda has said this is among the very top issues. Transportation, for sure, structural racism, early childhood impact, among the very top issues related to poverty. Tell me a little bit more. We got about a minute left. Tell me why this is so important to you.
It's a major, major, major win. Investments in young people are correlated with later school and later life success. And more importantly, child care subsidies, or child care in particular, is a major barrier to people impacted by poverty. The fact that we have within the catchment neighborhood 300 or will have 300 additional slots for child care, that's a major win. That was the priority of our MAPI, but it was a priority of our community for the last several years. So it's a priority for three reasons. One, the supports for the young person yield great benefits in later life. It's an opportunity to be able to provide support for the person looking for employment or looking for employment training. And the third, it's the dual generational approach. It's the compound. It's child care with transportation, with adult navigation. And that's what's going to create the system of social supports that our MAPI is working.
And it's collective impact,
and it's
because
collective
the Children's Agenda is a part of our organization.
Right.
So their advocacy for those dollars through Larry Marks was essential to our being successful.
Right.
So here again, it's all hands on deck.
And if you heard what Don Braven mentioned earlier here, if this initiative is successful, it will be because They have figured out, not figured out, they haven't solved this issue, but you understand that when somebody has one stop to go to and they're dealing with poverty, it may be for transportation, then they got to go somewhere for childcare, then they have to go somewhere for a different issue. If you can make it one stop, one of the things they're hearing about is how important childcare is. And if this kind of effort is successful, you're going to see more emphasis on helping young parents, helping with transportation, and hopefully creating more benchmarks soon for this. So I just want to thank our guests for being here, answering all of our and your questions. Don and Marvin, thank you, and hope you'll come back as we continue these discussions. Thank you so much. And Leonard Brock, thank you. We'll talk to you again very soon. I know you keep updating the community. We appreciate that, and so do they.
Thank you.
Leonard Brock is the Executive Director of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. All right, more connections straight ahead.